With the Elon Musk takeover of Twitter, many Catholics hoped that the days of woke censorship on the platform were over. And while things have gotten better, they still have a lot of ways to go to make it really a platform that Catholics can speak their minds by exactly what the church teaches and what they think. That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button. That lets the magical algorithms know that people are watching it and like it, and they'll share it with others. Our tech overlords will allow others to hear about it. Also, subscribe to the channel so you can know when new content comes up. Don't bother to hit the notify button because you have a life. Also, I encourage people to follow us on social media. We're obviously talking about social media today, talking about Twitter. We are on Twitter at Crisis Mag. And we're on all the other major social media channels. Usually it's at Crisis Mag. We're on Facebook, MeWe, Gitter, Gab. I don't know. The other ones too. Finally, we are still in the middle of our, well, actually, we're nearing the end of our twice a year fundraising campaign for Crisis Magazine. All of our content is offered for free. You don't have to pay a dime to read any of our articles, to listen to our podcast. We offer it all for free. However, there obviously is a cost. We can't do this without some funds going to various people, various software and hosting and all those type of things. And so, you know, we pay our writers at Crisis. So every one of the writers you see on there, we do pay them. We try to pay them something because they're worth it. So obviously we need to raise money. And I don't like doing fundraising. And so we only do it twice a year. And so this is one of our twice yearly. We do it in the spring. We do it in the fall. And we're nearing the end of it. We've raised a decent amount of money, but we would just encourage people to donate. If you go to crisismagazine.com/donate. Again, that's crisismagazine.com/donate. And donate something. We accept all ways that you can pay. Credit card, check, cryptocurrency. I don't know how many other Catholic websites and apostolates accept cryptocurrency, but we do. So please go to crisismagazine.com/donate. Okay, let's get into it. So we're talking about Twitter today. And currently, as I record this on December 6th, 2022, I'm currently in Twitter lockdown. I cannot get on Twitter. And in fact, I couldn't share on Twitter that I'm going to be doing this podcast. So I wouldn't be surprised if less people know about it. And I'll talk about a little bit later why I got suspended from Twitter. But I don't want to sound like the jilted boyfriend whose girlfriend has left him and that's all he thinks about. So my girlfriend Twitter has left me, has put me in timeout. Now that's all I think about. But I did want to talk about Twitter because it's in the news. At first, I was like, nah, I'm not going to talk about Twitter because nobody cares. But actually, people do. It's in the news. There's a lot going on with Twitter. And so I wanted to break that down. And so for those of you who follow me on Twitter and somehow found this podcast magically, even though I couldn't tweet about it, thank you for listening, for watching. Okay, so let's talk about Twitter a little bit. I've noticed that people who are on Twitter, who have an account and follow it regularly, they tend to overemphasize the impact of Twitter. It becomes, in many ways, the center of their universe. And they think all of reality kind of revolves around Twitter. And that's not a good thing. That's not healthy. However, I've also noticed that people who are not on Twitter, don't have an account, don't follow anybody, don't do anything on Twitter, they tend to underemphasize the impact of Twitter. They pretend it almost doesn't even exist. But the fact is that Twitter does have a pretty massive influence on our culture, on our society, and as we'll see, on our elections. So I think we need to have a balanced view of Twitter. We have to understand that it's not the end-all be-all. It's not real life, yet it does impact real life in a lot of ways. Now, Twitter, of course, is one of probably, I mean, I would say it's one of the big two or three. I mean, obviously, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram, TikTok. I know I don't really get on that at all, and I'm not really on Instagram anymore. Those are the big ones. I know there's a lot of the newer ones, for the young people and stuff like that, that I don't even bother trying to follow. But Twitter and Facebook are probably the big two that really have an influence, and maybe Instagram you throw in there as well. And it was founded by Jack Dorsey. I guess it's been about 15 years ago now. And originally I remember thinking, and I think a lot of people thought this when it first came out, boy, this is stupid. This is just dumb. You can only tweet 144 characters. I think it was 144 at first. You only tweet 144 characters and say what you're doing. And so it's like, basically people were just tweeting, I think I'm going to the bathroom now. I'm eating my lunch now. I'm walking down the street now. I mean, it just, and maybe you could soon add links to articles and things like that, but it started to develop and it became obviously very, very popular, very influential. And I joined, I think in 2014, I think it was. So I've been on there about 8 years now myself. I wasn't too into it at first. I was actually working for a diocese, so I was very kind of fearful about tweeting anything that could get me into trouble, which kind of tells us something about our church and about our society and about Twitter itself. And then over time, though, of course, like any social media platform, Twitter had to deal with spam, had to deal with problematic content and even downright nasty content, child porn, things like that. And so obviously it needed content moderation. It's not really a place people want to be if they're constantly getting spammed by bot accounts, if there's nasty stuff on there that they can't control, things like that. So there's content moderation. Obviously you can control on some level, you can block people, you can mute people, but you don't want something nasty popping up on your timeline. You don't want it to be where you make a tweet and all of a sudden all the comments are just spam. So Twitter rightly added some content moderation. But then 2016 happened, the election of Donald Trump and the big fight against misinformation. There was claims of Russian disinformation, things like that, which obviously have all been proven to be stupid and not true. But Trump then jumped on it on the other angle and talked about fake news and things like that. So now all of a sudden the social media platforms were pressured to do content moderation beyond just spam or illegal things posted, things like that, but instead really control against quote unquote misinformation, which we all know that turns content moderation into downright censorship, where they're controlling who can say what. Now, one of the things that and of course, this then from 2016 through 2020, this continued, increased. And as we'll talk about in a minute, it really came to the fore during the election of 2020. And it culminated, I would say, probably in January 2021 with the banning of the sitting president of the United States. I mean, it's still hard for me to believe that the sitting president of the United States was actually permanently banned from this. Well, wasn't so permanent. We'll find out later. But was banned from the social media platform because January 6th and all the other excuses they made. And of course, complaints against censorship began around 2016 and later. And I know a lot of conservatives particularly complained about it. Now, I will say, though, an argument on the other side was that it's a private company, that Twitter is just a private company. And so it can do whatever it wants. It can decide what is posted, what's not. And I admit, I kind of fell into this. This is my view too. My libertarian leanings made me think this as well, that perhaps it was true that it's just a private company. It can do whatever it wants. If it wants to only allow liberal people to post, fine. Conservatives can create their own platform where they allow a more free speech. And so that was the argument against it. And of course, liberals used this as well. However, it soon became clear that all the social media, major social media platforms were all doing content moderation in the exact same way and against the same type of information, almost as if it was coordinated, almost as if Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, others were basically following the same playbook. And so the question became, who's writing the playbook? Is Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg hanging out together and saying, okay, here's what we're going to allow, here's what we're not going to allow? Is there some mid-level managers that are doing that? Or is there maybe an outside organization, i.e. perhaps an outside a government that's deciding, okay, you're going to do this, you're not going to do that? And so now it's not really a private company issue anymore because now the government's involved. And so What we found, though, is what we've discovered is that our suspicions were absolutely correct, that there was government involvement. And this came out very recently. I mean, it's been suspected for a while, and there's been hints, and there's been some revelations that this is the case. But now there's the so-called the Twitter files, which are basically a dump of emails and other documentation from Twitter that has been released to a journalist, Matt Taibbi. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Sorry, Matt, if I mispronounce it. He's a well-respected journalist. He's on the liberal side, but he's always been very fair. He's been against big tech, and he's been one of these honest liberals, which aren't very, there's not very many of them. Excuse me. Like Glenn Greenwald. So he now is has gotten hold of this information, and nobody knows exactly how he got it. Most people suspect Elon Musk somehow got it to him. And so he just started a couple of days ago releasing some information, some of the files, some of the emails he's found. And so I have here, I'll pull it up on the screen. It's basically a his tweet thread. This is from last week, December 2nd. And it's the first installment in a series. So he's basically has a lot of different, he's got lots of files here, thousands of files. This is just some of them that he's releasing. And so these talk about the censorship that was going on. And he basically states that it's true. During the 2020 election, the Biden administration, I'm sorry, the Biden campaign was pushing and directing Twitter to delete certain tweets, to basically not allow certain things to be said. Now, the Trump administration was trying as well. But according to Taibbi, basically the Twitter staff was so much more sympathetic to the Democratic Party that it was very unbalanced. And here's an example I'll put up on the screen from Saturday, October 24th. Essentially, somebody in the Biden team sent a series of tweets to Twitter to take care of, more to review from the Biden team, it says. And it came back handle, which we all know means they were deleted. They were removed. And also even well-known people like James Woods, the actor, he had his removed as well because of what the Democratic Party was telling him to do. And then if you go down, let me find this. Basically what's going on then, the White House spokeswoman, Kayleigh McEnany, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce her last name. She was locked out of her account. She's the White House spokeswoman. This is in October of 2020. So right before an election, she's the White House spokesperson, and she is locked out of her Twitter account. One of the number one ways that you communicate with the people is through Twitter. And yet the White House spokeswoman could not even access her own account simply because it comes back to the New York Post story about the Hunter Biden laptop scandal, which I'm not going to get into details about that. But essentially what happened was New York Post was relating a story about Hunter Biden, his laptop and connections to Ukraine and potentially his dad helping him out and taking care of things, corruption, all that. And Twitter decided we're just going to remove the story. Not only we're not going to let even people share it online. And it talks about here that the laptop story was removed for a violation of the company's hacked materials policy. They were saying, basically, we have a policy that you can't distribute hacked materials on Twitter. In other words, if somebody hacks into another computer and gets information and then posts it on Twitter, their policies are not going to allow that. However, it's not exactly what happened here. This was a major newspaper, New York Post, was reporting something that they information they had, and they weren't even allowing the dissemination of that article. You could not share that article on Twitter before the election. And in fact, you couldn't even share it in your direct messages, in your DMs. That's how intense the censorship was going, which is just, amazing. And most of us were very upset at the time. It looks like Jack Dorsey, the CEO at the time, the founder, wasn't totally aware of what was going on. And he seemed to be unhappy about it. But essentially, though, the point is that we see that leading up to the 2020 election, Twitter was very involved in controlling the information that was being promoted on their platform and in a decidedly biased way to basically protect the Democrats, Biden campaign, and to not help in any way the Trump campaign, of course. And so this is confirming everything we know. Now, again, this is only the first batch of information that we have from Taibbi that he has on the Twitter files. And at this point, there could be a lot more. I think, in fact, it wasn't really anything that new about what he released last week, but it does confirm everything that we've always known. Now, again, this then ties back to Elon Musk. And so Elon Musk, the multi-billionaire, finally bought out Twitter, and he had promised when he took over, when he was looking into buying it, and then when he took over, it's going to be a free speech platform. And he's been cheering the Twitter files. He wants people to know exactly what Twitter was doing before he took over to try to control the election, control the results of the election. And so he has taken over now officially. I think it was beginning of November, maybe end of October that he took over. And it was a big splash and lots of people were fired. Top executives were fired. And it was going to be free speech. He talked a lot about restoring accounts that had been suspended. He actually restored the Donald Trump account, which has not tweeted. I mean, I will give credit. I mean, it's amazing. Donald Trump has actually been disciplined enough not to tweet since he got restored to the account. He restored Kanye for a while and then banned him again. But basically what Elon Musk is promising is that he will allow free speech on the platform. And of course, everybody knows, any common sense knows, free speech has its limits. We all know that. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater, blah, blah, blah. And on Twitter, doesn't mean you can post child porn. Shouldn't mean you can post child porn. It doesn't mean you can do other terrible things. Maybe actually say, I will kill you or something like that. You can't do explicit threats, things like that. But of course, there's a big, what's now a gray area on what's allowed and what isn't, what is actually included in free speech. And I found out personally, and others have found out, that the Elon Musk camp, the Elon Musk run Twitter has its limits on free speech, and they are not conducive to Catholicism. That's for sure. So what happened was, let me tell my own story of how I have an article about this in an editor's desk column at Crisis that talks about this as well. But let me just explain what happened. So back in March, I tweeted, just a reminder, homosexual activity is a sin, transgenderism is a mental illness, abortion is murder. And that's the entire tweet. And so three statements. Homosexual activity is a sin. Obviously, that's just a statement of fact from a Christian viewpoint. I recognize people who don't believe in sin, aren't Christians, may not accept that. But it's the teaching of the Catholic Church for forever. Transgenderism is a mental illness. This is something every single human being on earth would have believed just a few years ago. In fact, I think it's interesting that if you go back to the old 1990s show Frasier, which is about two psychiatrists, Frasier and his brother, they often, as a gag, they'll use somebody dressing up, a man dressing up as a woman, as the obvious sign of somebody not being completely with it, having a mental problem. And this is in the 1990s, not that long ago. This is Hollywood saying this. So even Hollywood totally understood this. So it's a mental illness, and abortion is murder. This is obviously something everybody believed forever until recently, and obviously the Catholic Church strongly believes. So this was back in March, I tweeted that I got suspended from Twitter for violating the rules against hateful conduct. It said, you may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious disease, or whatever the whole host of new offended classes are. Now, obviously, I did not promote violence against. I did not threaten. And I didn't harass. Now, I would imagine they would say I did harass by saying, like, for example, transgenderism is a mental illness. I think that's the one that really triggered them. That was called harassment. So that was back in March. Got suspended. Had to delete the tweet in order to come back on. Fine. So I do that. Well, then I decide, okay, Elon Musk is in charge. I decided last week, Elon Musk is in charge. He says he's for free speech. He's going to bring back suspended accounts. He's going to let people talk more freely. So let's see, is he going to allow, is the new Elon Musk run Twitter going to allow this? So last week, I tweeted back in March, I was locked out for a week for hateful content, for a hateful conduct tweet. So to see if things have changed on Twitter, let me say these facts again. Homosexual activity is a sin. Transgenderism is a mental illness. Abortion is murder. For the first few hours, it was allowed up. And that's what happened the first time. People were cheering, like, oh, good. Twitter's better now. We can actually say things that we believe, say the truth without getting shut down. Well, a few hours later, then, bam, got kicked off again for violating rules against hateful conduct. This time I decided to appeal it. I didn't appeal it the first time because I thought, what's the point? I was like, okay, I'm going to appeal it this time and see what happens. So I appeal it. A few hours later, I say, nope, you're still going to be, your appeal is denied. This isn't allowed on Twitter. And so basically I had to delete it. And this time after deleting, I have to wait 7 days in timeout, sucking my thumb in the corner before I'm allowed back on. And I'm currently in that. And so what we can tell is that free speech isn't really free speech. If you can't say these things that literally everybody believed just a few seconds ago, practically in human history, it's not really free speech. Now, another thing of my friend, Bug Hall, he is a former child actor, actually. I can't remember what movie he was in. He was in some movie back in the 80s or something like that. But he's a devout Catholic, lives on a farm. And he got banned, and he got banned permanently, I think, because he had a few strikes against him. I only have had two strikes against me. I think he had three or four strikes against him. He got banned for the hateful conduct. And he basically said, now, before I continue, I just want to say, for those who are listening to this, if you have children around, you might want to maybe pause or skip this part real quick. It's not really that graphic, but I'm aware of the need for controlled speech in front of young people. But he said, there's no such thing as gay sex. Sodomites simulate sex, as their sodomitical acts are non-unitive. Now, clearly that's harsh language. Clearly that's maybe not the way a lot of Catholics might want to say it. But it's not really untrue either. I mean, obviously it depends on how you define the word sex. He's obviously defining it in the classical sense of the unitive act that is open to procreation. And that's impossible for people who are homosexual. And so for that tweet alone, he's been kicked off completely, again, for supposedly promoting violence against threatening or harassing other people. He's not doing any of that. He's simply stating these facts. Now, you could even just state it's an opinion. Like, okay, let's say you're not Catholic, you're not Christian, you're an atheist. Why can't Bug just say this opinion of his? This is his belief about these things. Which, again, it's not like a crazy belief that just he made up. This is a belief that millions and millions of people have had throughout human history, and millions of people believe it today, yet it's not allowed, supposedly as harassment. And so, again, free speech isn't exactly completely free in this on the new Twitter. Oh, just real quick, some of the comments mentioned Bug Hall was in Little Rascals, the Little Rascals movie, I think from the 80s or something like that. Sorry, Bug, if you're watching that, I forgot your claim to fame. So this calls into question, like, our views of Elon Musk. When Elon Musk, he's become somewhat of a hero in the conservative world and even in the conservative Catholic world because of he is fighting against a lot of the woke agenda. He's fighting against, like, he brought back Donald Trump to Twitter. Now, Donald Trump hasn't actually come through the door, but he's opened the door for him. And so there's a lot to be praised for with Elon Musk, so he can be an ally, but we have to recognize it's an uneasy ally. He's an ally in the sense that one of the things that was great that Twitter did recently was they got rid of their COVID misinformation rules. So now you're not going to get tagged or deleted or removed if you state facts, information about COVID that the people who work at Twitter don't agree with. So that's a great thing. So he is an ally. I mean, he's doing things that we should support and we should praise. However, clearly, it's an uneasy alliance. He's not really part of the Catholic team, obviously. I think his Twitter profile, his photo is from Halloween, where he's wearing literally a satanic garb or something like that. So this is somebody that we need to be very skeptical of or cautious with, allying too much with. And so on the really, on the truly important issues, such as the truth about human sexuality, the truth about what it means to be a man or a woman, the truth about abortion, things that really matter in our society today, he's not on our side. He's not going to make it. Now, of course, I mean, you could say, well, it's not like Elon Musk is checking all these tweets that Eric Sammons makes or Bug Hell makes. I get that. But I guarantee if this was important to him, it would have gotten down to his people. The COVID stuff got down to him, the Trump and all that stuff got down to him. They would have allowed this if Elon Musk had considered this something to allow. And so Elon Musk, you know, the other thing I'm suspicious about with Elon is the fact that government has controlled social media platforms now, I mean, in a kind of backhanded way for the past few years. And so you need to be pretty resistant to government influence in order to run Twitter as a truly free speech platform. The problem is, in some ways, that's almost impossible because the government, they make the laws, they have the guns, they can make you do things that you don't even want to do. They can basically say, like, if the FBI says, hey, you know, you might want to do something about that, the tweets about that subject, it's hard to say no to that, because then the FBI could all of a sudden say, hey, guess what we found, quote unquote, found on your computer or whatever the case may be. Same with the CIA or the other three-letter organizations that are not our friends. So that's the one thing. But also, Elon Musk, his history of his companies, they're all government-subsidized companies. He's been in bed with the government throughout his entire career. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not necessarily criticizing for this. He works in a system that he does not control, and he's used it to his advantage, to his great advantage. I mean, making billions of dollars. But the fact is that he's worked with government over the years, and I'm not convinced that he's not going to work with government when it comes to 2024 election, because he didn't take over Twitter until after 2022 or right before. I can't remember exactly the date. So he didn't have much say on that. And I wouldn't be surprised if, when it comes down to it, the pressure on Twitter is going to be too immense in 2024, that we're going to see a similar thing that we're seeing now. So what should Catholics do about this? I mean, can Twitter be saved? I titled this, Dare We Hope That Twitter Be Saved, which is a nod to our friend Bishop Barron, of course. Because the truth is Twitter something that can be saved? And should we even care? Do we want it to be saved? I mean, I think ultimately Twitter has obviously been a force for a lot of evil in the world. It's been a force for a lot of bad, but it's also been a force for good. Catholics have been able to speak their minds, have been able to talk to people. And I know people say nobody's ever convinced on the internet. That's not true. Completely not true. I know story after story of people who changed their minds radically on positions because of things they read on the internet, including Twitter. And so it's the marketplace of ideas today, whether we like it or not. And so I do think Catholics should be on there. Now, that being said, there's so many dangers to Twitter that I do think, and other social media, that I think Catholics should be cautious. If Twitter starts to control you instead of you controlling your Twitter, you need to get off and never come back and just say, forget it. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. You really have to know what you're able to control in your own life. So, for example, with me on Twitter and all social media, I only use it on my desktop computer. I cannot get to Twitter when I'm out and about. I cannot get to Twitter even when I'm outside my office. The only place I can access Twitter is in my office. So if I'm not in my office, I'm not on it. And you know what that means? That means I'm not thinking about it either. I think these are type of steps that people need to take so Twitter doesn't overtake them, doesn't control them, because it can be very bad for the spiritual life. However, that being said, if you can control your Twitter usage, then I think it is important for Catholics, some Catholics at least, to be on there to defend the faith, to do as much as we can, at least until we get kicked off. And I don't even have a problem with certain people on Twitter, Catholic on Twitter, who maybe are influential and they don't necessarily say the things they know will get them kicked off. I mean, it's not like they're required to say them. And so if they're doing it just simply to stay on so they can influence in good ways and lead them to their books or lead them to their websites where they talk about these things, I'm fine with that too. I don't think, I'm not like, oh, you have to say the unsayable things in order to be a good Catholic on Twitter. I don't think that's true. So I do think, though, likely most of us eventually probably will get kicked off, even with Elon Musk in charge. I mean, I'm on two strikes, maybe three. I can't keep track. I'm not sure how many it is before you're permanently banned. But it's possible it'll happen to me before too long. I just think we need to be bold in the in the public square, and prudent as well. So we're bold, we state the truth, but we do have to have some prudence at times, which means at times, yes, we might moderate a little bit ourselves what we say. Depends on the situation, obviously. But we need to be in the public square as Catholics. I mean, I'm a big believer in that we can't just obviously, as the editor of Crisis, I believe that we can't just hole up. I mean, obviously there's people called to the contemplative life, but most of us lay people were called to proclaim the truth in the public square, whether that is in our families, in our homes, in our parishes, in our communities, or online. So dare we hope that Twitter be saved? I'm not counting on it. But hopefully maybe Elon Musk, I mean, hey, maybe he's going to be a St. Paul. He's going to have a great conversion experience, become a great practicing Catholic, and really make Twitter a place that we can promote the faith and bring many people to Christ. Hey, why don't we pray for that? I think that might be a good thing to pray for. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. So if you're not on Twitter, don't worry about it. But if you are on Twitter, do everything you can to promote the faith and don't get controlled by Twitter itself. And pray for the conversion of Elon Musk. God can do anything. He could definitely convert the world's richest man. Okay, everybody. Until next time, God love you.